potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new films Dune, The Harder They Fall, The Electrical Life of Louis Wayne, Invasion, and Just Beyond. I'm also going to be talking about some news, the trailer park, and the home cinema roundup featuring Deadly Friend. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
First, as I've been doing over the last couple months, is let's talk about the box office from last weekend. Halloween Kills killed with $49.4 million over the weekend. Now, that's a little bit smaller than the mid-70s range of the Halloween 2018 pseudo-sequel. You know, but that's still a great number. That's way more than anyone was predicting. They were expecting it maybe in the 30s, and especially for being in the middle of still a pandemic, as well as being on a day and date release schedule. Because remember, this aired on Peacock as well as in theaters, and it still made almost $50 million over the opening weekend, which kind of throws in the face the whole idea that, oh, streaming kills a movie. Because what did we hear about Black Widow? Oh, the fact that it was available killed the box office, which it didn't. Then what did other people say? Oh, it's because there was a pristine copy available online. It could be pirated, so that's what killed the box office. Really? How come nobody's talking about the piracy boogeyman for the boogeyman movie that's out? What this shows that the day and date thing in itself isn't killing movies. The right movie for the right audience is going to be seen in theaters regardless of if it's a day and date release or not. Because we're still playing with the same demographic. The same audience that's going to see Free Guy and Shang-Chi and Venom. Because if you compare it to the other new release last week, The Last Duel, it made a miserable less than $5 million. It made basically one-tenth of what Halloween Kills did. And that had huge stars, Ben Affleck, Adam Driver, Matt Damon. It was directed by Ridley Scott. And it was theatrical only, so no piracy boogeyman's going to hurt that movie. I mean, it has everything that you'd expect for a big movie, but you know what? It was also catering towards older audiences. And I've said this before, this is probably not even related to COVID necessarily, but there's a lot of people, particularly those over 30, who prefer to watch movies at home because they've learned over the last couple of years that it's doable, it's a good experience, and there's a lot of reasons you can want to watch something at home. You don't have unwanted talking. You don't have other people using cell phones. You have the comfort of your own environment. You can have it hot or cold, however you want it. You don't have to deal with people eating noisily around you. You can eat whatever you want. You can drink whatever you want. And you know what? And this speaks towards the older generation. If you gotta pee, you can pause the movie when it's at home. Any form of streaming, you can at least pause the movie for the 10 minutes it takes to go to the bathroom. Or if you fall asleep in it, you can come back and watch the rest of it later. Speaking as somebody who just hit 50, I can tell you that's something people care about. You can be a movie fan and not like going to the movie theater. And then the other thing you'll notice on the box office, The Addams Family 2, it made $7.1 million in its second weekend. In its second weekend, it beat The Last Duel. And that one's on streaming as well. So it's not that theaters are back 100%. It's just they don't have all the audience all the way through the age range. And you may never get those back because you already lost the much older crowd long time ago. But now you're losing the people in their 40s and 50s. And that's okay. People can watch movies how they want to. That's the beauty of the modern world. Now, the next thing I want to talk about is Rob Zombie has posted on his Instagram the first look at the characters of his reboot of The Munsters. And, you know, when I first heard about it, I go, gosh, maybe he'll do something like what Eli Roth did with The House with a Clock in its Walls, where he took a director who was very visceral and violent and not very good and gave them a kid's movie and ended up kind of doing something that was really fun for an adolescent audience. But no, Rob Zombie has proved that he is going right back at what he is known for. These don't look good. I mean, they show Herman Munster, Lily Munster, and Grandpa Munster, and it has a good throwback look to it. I mean, it kind of looks like the characters on the TV series, but it's got zombies' dirty hands all over it. I mean, look at Grandpa's mustache. He's got this big mutton chop type mustache. And now nobody's surprised that Sherry Moon is going to be playing Lily. She's a terrible actress, and everybody knew that the main female character is always played by Sherry Moon. So she's never going to be as good as Ivanta Carlo was. But you can go find this image. You can find it anywhere. Just type in Rob Zombie's The Munsters. You can see the three of them sitting in their production chairs. Just look at Herman Munster and look at the expression on his face. He looks upset. He looks nasty. He looks mean. And that's everything wrong with Rob Zombie's approach. I challenge you to go back and find a shot or a screen grab or a publicity still of Fred Gwynne in the makeup not looking goofy. The closest he can get is look maybe surprised, but he always looked like Santa Claus in the monster. Even though he's dressed like a monster, he just looked silly and fun and lovable. And the guy in this picture looks just mean. I mean, if Rob Zombie's film were alcohol, it'd be Everclear and Schlitz. It'd be nothing but white trash and meanness. And I don't want anything to do with those. Listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first one I want to hit is the trailer for the Cowboy Bebop series on Netflix live action, and that is going to be streaming on November 19th.
Hey, there's a new bounty on the line.
Worth the trouble?
Want to keep the lights on around here?
Where did we find this dipstick?
We'll handle this one
on our own.
Not a chance.
Not that way. Bang!
I got him.
That's not the bounty.
I got him.
That's not the bounty either.
What the?
I've seen the Cowboy Bebop movie, which was apparently a follow-up to the TV series, which is on Tubi, by the way. And that is based on a manga series. So I'm so far removed from when I saw that Cowboy Bebop movie, I knew nothing. I was so confused. And it was like at a all-night movie marathon. So I was kind of in and out through the whole thing. So I don't have a really good perspective on Cowboy Bebop. This looks fun. This looks like it's going for sort of that grindhouse feel with multiple different styles to it. So I'm kind of game for what I'm seeing. I may try and check out some of the Cowboy Bebop series on Tubi. I don't know if I'm going to have time to watch it in the next month, but, you know, we'll see. But this one looks kind of cool. I'm kind of interested in seeing where this goes. But I have no idea whether it is authentic to the original source material. The next one I want to hit is The Batman, which had a new trailer drop last weekend at a DC fan event where they released all this information about all of their releases coming out for the superheroes. And that one comes into theaters March 4th.
When that light hits the sky, it's not just a call. It's a warning.
I've been trying to reach you.
This is a powder keg, and Rither's the match.
I can take care of myself.
I don't care what happens to me.
It's only going to get worse for you.
I mean, I'm looking forward to this one. There's a certain darkness look that is sort of generic to a lot of these movies. And I just hope they do something more than just make it dark and creepy, because that's been done time and time and time and time again. Let's do something. It doesn't have to be light and fluffy. We don't have to go back to the 1960s version, but I can't understand a word anyone says in this trailer. Everyone's talking like this, and there's all these noise and this big loud noise in the background. I am interested in the sense that I saw the budget was about $100 million, which I'm like, that's pretty low for a Batman movie. And that's good, because, you know, then they're not betting the farm on it. They're not saying, well, this has to make $1 billion. That's $100 million modestly priced in American films today. That's it for the segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about the TV series Just Beyond and Invasion. welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump into the reviews and hit some TV first. The first one I want to talk about is on Disney Plus. Now, it actually dropped last week, but I figured it's worth checking out. I want to take a look and talk about Just Beyond. This Disney Plus original series is based on R.L. Stine's graphic novels, featuring a series of Twilight Zone-style stories of science fiction and horror geared for tweens.
It looks like it's going to be another beautiful day. In olden
days, a good are you crazy? You can't bring wands to school.
Bye.
The young mind's a sponge. We just give them a little squeeze.
We have a visitor.
Can she see us?
I don't quite feel like myself.
Are we cursed?
We're not cursed. I'm just different.
I've always been a fan of anthology series. I've always liked short stories. And in the written format, I've liked that. I've liked writing short stories. I've liked reading short stories. And I like watching short stories. Because, you know, sometimes there are TV series that are definitively long stories, you know. There are some that I'm like, oh my God, I'm three or four episodes in and there's no story yet. It's all just character and world building. We'll get to that in a little bit. But what I like about Just Beyond is it's they're these short, digestible stories, and they're for kids. They're for tweens. They're for kids that are like 8 to 12 years old. And I told my son, who's 20 now, I said, if you would have seen this 10 years ago, you would have lost your mind. You would have loved this series. And I would have loved this series if I saw it when I was 10. I mean, they're kids' stories. Nothing really graphic happens, but, you know, it's Twilight Zone-esque things. It leans a little more into science fiction. Like, there's one episode where these kids think that their parents are actually aliens and they're investigating that. But it does lean into horror stories as well. I mean, there's one with this girl seeing either a ghost or an apparition. There's one that takes what would be considered horror or Halloween elements and tell a story that's not really scary at all. Like, there's this one where this girl is a witch going to school, and it's her dealing with the struggles of being a witch and being different. And it's done in a Wizards of Waverly Place kind of mentality. Although what's interesting is this is something about a lot of Disney Plus series is they've deviated from the standard template and timbre of the Disney Channel. The Disney Channel basically ran as a sitcom channel for kids, tweens. And that's how you got stuff like Wizards of Waverly Place and Hannah Montana and That's So Raven. And even the earlier stuff like The Jersey and Even Stevens, those were, again, sitcom-y kind of things. And Disney Channel would also do cartoons and stuff like Phineas and Ferb. But what they are doing on Disney Plus is they seem to be breaking out of that a little bit. They give a higher production value. And they're trying to do basically a network of a variety of different shows. You can still find classic Disney Channel stuff, but, you know, something like Just Beyond is, you know, a bit of a diversion, and it's like better made than the stuff you saw on the Disney Channel. What it's there to do is to help solidify that ongoing child audience that's keeping the parents paying their $7 or $8 or $10 subscription to Disney Plus, whatever you're paying for, because I've pointed this out before. They're clocking in over $1 billion a month with that streaming service. So I'm going to say I enjoy Just Beyond. I like R.L. Stine's stuff. It's nothing too heavy. It's not as heavy as the Fear Street stuff that we saw on Netflix this summer. It's more on the lines of Goosebumps. But, you know, it's cute stories. I mean, for an adult, they're kind of simple, but they're still fun. So I'm going to have to say Just Beyond kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Invasion. This Apple TV series looks at an alien invasion from the points of view of average people.
We now believe these incidents are not unrelated, but in fact, connected. What is being visited upon our Earth is not of our Earth.
Listen to me.
You're leaving now.
That's my car!
I'm keeping us safe.
Safe from what?
Your squad was lost in an encounter. Was that your only encounter?
No.
Remember how I said some series take forever to even just get to the point, to get to the story, because there's so much world building and character building? And there's a dance, you know, you got to look at putting together a story within a structure like a movie or a television as plates. You're spinning a bunch of plates. Now, on one plate, you're spinning characters. You got to have good characters, likable characters that are doing things and have dramatic arcs in their own life. But then you also have to have something happening. You can't just have the characters living their life because then you have no overall arcing structure. And you got to have a villain, and then you have to have other elements like the look of the show and that sort of thing. But this Invasion series, the first three episodes have dropped this weekend on Apple TV Plus, so you can watch them now. And I think it's 10 episodes, and they're going to be dropping one every week. I watched three. I'll give a series three to check it out, but if nothing to me very exciting is happening in those first three episodes, a lot of times I'll abandon it. I abandoned this show. I have access to a lot of other episodes. I just have no interest in watching them because nothing happens in the, oh yeah, you have the characters and like there's one care, like one of the characters is there's this woman and she's got two kids and she's married to a guy and she kind of gave up her potential Harvard educated medical career to take care of the kids. And then the guy's having an affair. And as this alien invasion is happening, they're fighting while they're trying to save their family. But there's, you don't get any alien invasion. It's just nothing but a kitchen sink drama as people are running around and seeing weird things happening. And every episode I'd start, I go, well, maybe something will happen. Maybe we'll actually see what's happening. No, we're not going to do that. We're just going to continue on with this. Like there's another one where this woman works at the Japanese version of NASA and she was dating an astronaut and the astronaut's off world and, you know, something's happening and she's reacting to it, but you're not getting any sort of information. You're not getting any story. It's just the characters. It is all character and building. And look, that's fine. You want to do that for one episode because they kind of did that with Loki on Disney Plus, but eventually you got to the plot of the story. This was just 3 hours so far of their lives and oh, they're noticing something going on, or maybe they're going on the run because there's something happening or something happened to their past, but they're just sort of all kind of flopping around their lives. It's ultimately it's boring. And maybe something happens soon, but I'm losing faith. I've lost faith. I really don't feel like I want to watch the show anymore. And then on top of it, everyone is so serious. There's not a shred of humor or lightheartedness. And, you know, even in the middle of an alien invasion, I would be making jokes. Everybody is super serious. And there's a thing that's happening in science fiction, these long form science fiction pieces, where it's very drab and it's very gray. And even though this is all over the planet, except for this one thing that's happening, I think in Afghanistan, because there's sort of, they're in a desert region of Afghanistan. So you get, you know, sort of like the red desert. But everybody else is like, it's constantly dreary and cloudy. And you ever have a friend who every time you see him, they're like, oh, how are you doing? And they're telling you all the terrible things. Guess what happened next? And then this person wronged me. And they're giving you sob story after sob story after sob. And you're just like, oh my God, shut up. I didn't want to hear every single one of your problems. And the world is not just all about you. And that's what I felt every single character of this series is. So, you know, even though it's highly anticipated, it costs $200 million to make. I so far haven't seen any of that $200 million. I'm going to have to say the invasion kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Oh, okay. That's it for the segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Dune and the electrical life of Louis Wayne. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump into the movie reviews with Dune. Denis Villeneuve directs this first part of Frank Herbert's epic space saga about a resource critical to interplanetary travel being mined on a single planet in the galaxy.
We are House Atreides. There is no call we do not answer. There is no faith that we betray.
Smile, Gurney.
I am smiling.
The Emperor asks us to bring peace to Arrakis. House Atreides accepts.
You need to be ready. You've never met Harkonnens before. They're not human, they're brutal.
This is Idun. Kill them all.
I have to admit, I do come to Dune with quite a bit of history. I read the book when I was in high school, maybe eighth grade or so. I mean, it was pretty dense and there was a lot to it. So I probably missed an awful lot of it. But then I saw the movie that David Lynch directed back in 1984, and I absolutely loved it. I have remained a fan and loyalist to the David Lynch version of Dune for decades, in spite of everybody, oh, it's a terrible version of the movie. You know, what's funny is now you're starting to hear people come out of the woodworks going, I really like that David Lynch version. But I talked about that a couple weeks ago, so I'm not going to drone on about my love of the David Lynch version. But Dune has always been seen as one of those unfilmable movies, which I think is funny because this is the third time they're filming it. It was written in the 60s, like, I don't know, 1965, I think was when the book came out. And it was always considered an unfilmable book because of how dense and complicated it is. It deals with politics and religion and prophecy and galactic trade. And there are certain things that are not very well veiled allegories to the real world. I mean, Arrakis is this planet. It's a giant desert planet, and it has these vast deserts that has this spice, this chemical in the sand. It's a psychoactive chemical that allows these navigators to fold space, and it allows people to have interplanetary travel, which is critical to transporting people around the galaxy. And so it's only available on one planet, and the Emperor is putting different houses in charge of it. And there's a political struggle going on between the House Atreides and House Harkonnen. And it's pretty easy to see that it's an allegory for oil and OPEC and that sort of thing, especially since it was made in the 60s. And it's about a resource that's primarily available in the desert. And there are chiefs and fiefdoms that are in charge of it, and great wealth being amassed. And like the Harkonnens, the bad guy Vladimir Harkonnen is this big fat guy who's carried around on these suspenders in the air because he's so heavy. And of course, he represents the gluttony of capitalism. And then you have House Atreides, which is trying to do good, but they're still trying to keep the spice flowing. And, you know, I mean, it's very densely packed, and there's tons of characters. And as much as I loved the David Lynch version, I was very curious about Denis Villeneuve's version of it. And I was curious to see it. I've been waiting for a while. It got delayed. And then there's this famous feud going on where he wanted to just show it exclusively in theaters, but it's going on to HBO Max. You can watch it right now if you want to. You can either go to the theater or watch it right now. So there's a long history behind this. And the first thing that's important to point out is this is just the first half of the book. It seems to me I'm repeating that to people and everybody knows it, but I don't think everybody realizes that. Now, it starts off and the movie literally opens up and it says Dune Part 1, but it doesn't tell the full story. So if you've gone and seen the David Lynch version or the sci-fi version that they had on Sci-Fi Channel in the 90s or the 2000s, where it was a much lower budget production, you could certainly expect to see the whole story. You don't. It's only half the story. And that's important to know because you got to know what you're getting into. You know, like if you went to go see Lord of the Rings and you're like, well, they just ended in the middle. They didn't get the ring yet. Well, yeah, there's two more movies. And Denis Villeneuve wants to make a second film, but they didn't shoot him concurrently. I think that was a mistake. But the movie itself is, it's epic. It's huge. It's big. It's got a booming soundtrack almost to a fault. You know, it's kind of like a Christopher Nolan movie where it's really, really soft and they're going to talk like this. And then blah, 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 big, huge explosions and musical notes and everything. But I, you know how I say that the Invasion series, like that was the first three episodes, were all world building and character introductions. That's kind of what this is. It's a lot of setup for the second film, which is going to, or ostensibly have, bigger action. And this does have action. It has some really cool effects because, of course, on Arrakis, you have these giant sandworms that grow to like 400 meters long, and they've got the worm effects are really cool, and it's epic and it's big. But it does fall into some traps that I don't like and that I've seen science fiction heading to. First of all, it's very monochromatic. And one of the things with David Lynch's version, I know I'm complaining and I'm comparing, but when you went to the different planets, you could tell very well you're at a different planet just because of the color scheme. But this one, no matter whether you're on Kaladin or Gedi Prime, it all kind of looks the same. And it's very monochromatic. It's not well lit. I mean, here they've got human computers and interstellar travel and the weirding way, and yet they haven't perfected table lamps in this movie. It's so underlit at times, it's frustrating. On top of it, the characters, I'm not wild about some of the actors. Some of the actors I love. I think Oscar Isaac's great. Rebecca Ferguson's great. Jason Momoa's great. I think Josh Brolin's great in it. I think the Harkonnens, to a degree, they look good. But the problem with the Harkonnens is they were so disturbingly weird in David Lynch's movie. It's like David Lynch showed up in Universal and said, I want to make this movie. And here's how I see the Harkonnens. And I'm like, oh, David Lynch, director of Eraserhead. No, we want weirder. Go weirder and more disturbing. But this one, they're just sort of dark and creepy and mean. There's a lot of sci-fi out there right now, especially on streaming and cable. And if you've watched Raised by Wolves, and if you've watched Invasion, and if you've watched Foundation, you could almost intercut it with this one. It doesn't have a unique look to it. And that's sort of disappointing to me. And like Zendaya plays Shani, and even though the character was kind of underdeveloped in the first original movie, she's awful in this. And I'm not a big fan of Timothée Chalamet, and he just kind of mopes over her through this movie. And there's a lot of stuff where he's just like, it's like, I'm dreaming about this girl and I want to meet this girl. Oh yeah, Kwisatz Haderach and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. But this girl, she's pretty. So there's parts of it that don't sit quite well with me, but it is epic and it's beautiful. It's a great beginning of a movie and I'd love to see the rest of it. But I think they really kind of bet the farm on this one because they got a lot of eggs in a single basket. But still, you know, it's not my favorite Dune, not by a long shot. But still, I'm going to say it kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. I got to talk really quickly about this one. I might come on and finish off the review of this one on the other end of the break. But let's talk about really quickly the electrical life of Louis Wayne. Benedict Cumberbatch stars as a mentally troubled, suffering artist who has a multitude of interests but finds himself with a lack of options.
You capture something of a cat, perhaps because you yourself are an outcast.
I do it to provide for the five hungry and precocious sisters that I live at home with.
And we've had a governess.
I think you're the first person to see that cats are ridiculous, frightened, and brave, like us.
Miss Richardson has had an incredibly positive effect on this family.
You're a cat man.
Cat man.
A whole cat world.
What's going on in that funny little head of yours?
This is the true story of Louis Wayne, who is an artist in Victorian England. I imagine if you went to a psychiatrist today or a psychologist today, they'd diagnose him with a whole bunch of things like ADHD and probably a certain level of autism or Asperger's syndrome. He was unable to stay still, and he had his hand in so many different things in science. He was interested in science and boxing and art. And well, even art, he was very gifted as an artist. He could draw with both hands and all this. And he just whipped stuff out, and that's how he made money. But that's not what his passion was. And it is this story of this artist who unfortunately falls into what makes him most famous is something he's not interested in at all. It's a neat little story, and I commend Benedict Cumberbatch for being in this, because Cumberbatch usually plays these stoic, strong-willed characters that we have all seen, stuff like Sherlock and Doctor Strange. But in this one, he's kind of a mess. And I like that. He's taking risks. He's maybe not getting the big budget stuff with those kind of characters, but he's certainly doing these kind of characters. Actually, I'm running out of time here. I want to talk a little bit more about this on the other end of the break, but I need to go and pay some bills here first. So when I come back after the break, I'm going to be talking about the rest of Louis Wayne, The Harder They Fall, and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring Deadly Fred. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's finish up my opinion of The Electrical Life of Louis Wayne. This is an interesting look at an artist out of our time. He ends up drawing these pictures of cats and these whimsical cats. And you may not have ever heard of this guy, but if you see these cat pictures, you're like, oh, wait, I have seen those somewhere. Your memory will be, you may not be able to place where you've seen them, but they were very famous. It's like wanting to do everything from Popular Mechanics to astrophysics and ended up creating Winnie the Pooh. And so he felt unfulfilled, and he did have a kind of a tragic life because his mind did not slow down enough for him to actually really work in the real world. Claire Foy plays the woman he falls in love with, and they have a relationship, and it's very sweet and it's charming, although there's a certain level of tragedy there. Of course, you're living in Victorian England, so there's a lot of tragedy with health and everything back then. But it's a tragic story, and it's an interesting story, but it's also very beautiful in its own right. But the big problem is, among all the great performances by, like, Claire Foy and Benedict Cumberbatch, and Toby Jones as his editor at one of the papers, it falls into the same problems that biopics do. You know, most people's lives follow similar trajectories. So this is not a big surprise how things work out for this guy. And that's sad. It is. But still, I'm going to have to say that The Electrical Life of Louis Wayne kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about The Harder They Fall. This grindhouse-style Western follows an outlaw hunting gunslinger who is seeking revenge against the man who murdered his family.
Rufus Buck.
Man, old devil. This going to be Buck's last day amongst the living.
What exactly he do to you?
Call it a professional robbery.
I know who you are. That love. The outlaw hunts down those who trespass against him with no mercy.
I heard Rufus Buck was back.
This ain't no rule to ask a friend to travel.
Think Destiny's coming to you?
This is available. It's limited release in theaters right now, I'm assuming, for a qualifying theatrical run. And then on November 3rd, I believe, is streaming on Netflix. So you got about a week and a half before you can watch this for free. Quote unquote free. If you're still paying for Netflix, you do realize that Netflix is not for free. Even if you're using somebody else's account, somebody's paying for it. So it's not like it's free. It's not like you buy a TV and you just pull stuff out of the air. Netflix costs money. And that's why they're so profitable, because they've got something like 200 and some million accounts globally. And, you know, they're probably billing about $3 billion a month. So, yeah, there's a lot of money coming in. So anyways, but Netflix has this movie. It's a African-American centered Western. And it's all about these characters in the Old West. And they mention this a couple times to kind of explain their locations and where they're going. But, you know, they go to African-American towns because out West, you know, it was well before civil rights. So they weren't allowed in the white towns, you know. And there's several things I really like about this. It gives it a grindhouse feel to it. It's shot like a grindhouse movie. It feels like that's the spaghetti Western is a little more visceral. It's not that old high Western from the 40s. You know, it's not a Hopalong Cassidy movie. It's more of a Django movie. And the characters are a lot of fun. It might be a little overcrowded with characters because you got the two different gangs, and at times you're trying to figure out who everybody is and whose loyalties and who's got pasts or whatever with each other. But it's a rootin' tootin' fun time. I mean, it's a shoot 'em up. It's got some great villains in it. It's got some great performances in it. And it's really neat to juxtapose this against Dune, where Dune is this high concept science fiction epic. And it's about three different colors in it. It's got a gray, it's got a blue gray, and it's got sort of a red gray for Arrakis. In this movie, it is bright and colorful. And just because they're in a Western doesn't mean it was all sepia tone. You guys do realize that things were not black and white in the 50s. It's just they had black and white photography back then. And so just because all the pictures you see are black and white and sepia tone from the Old West does not mean that the Old West was black and white and sepia tone. It was bright and colorful and vivid. And that's one of the things I loved about this movie. At times, some of the production design looks a little too new and a little too slick, but I'm willing to forgive that just to watch something that is visually interesting with a color palette and some really cool stuff going on. And it has some tongue-in-cheek things that bust out of the genre and anachronisms that are kind of fun. But it's a good, solid Western. So The Harder They Fall, if you can catch it in cinemas, it's available now in limited release from Netflix. Or you can wait a week and a half. You can watch it on the service for your subscription fee. But I'm going to have to say The Harder They Fall rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. Today's spotlight is on the collector's edition of Deadly Friend, which comes from Scream Factory. It actually made Blu-ray landfall last week, and that is a movie from the 80s. It's from 1986. It's directed by Wes Craven, and it comes out in the shadow of Nightmare on Elm Street. He made Nightmare on Elm Street in 1984, and he would not be known for anything else, really, until he did Scream 10 years later. So in Deadly Friend, Wes Craven directs this off-center story about a robotic genius who implants a computer chip into a dead girl's brain, bringing her to life to start a killing spree.
Hi.
Samantha.
Come here, the police.
Get out of my house!
Hey, girl.
She's killing people.
Mom?
Sam?
Sam. You're so cute.
Now, if you actually watch that trailer, you don't necessarily get that. Because the movie itself, it's based on a book that then Bruce Joel Rubin wrote a screenplay of that had a certain sweetness to it. But it had characters that were like 13 years old. And they made the characters older. They made them ostensibly about senior in high school or freshman, junior in college, you know, right around 18 years old. Christy Swanson, best known for the original Buffy the Vampire Slayer, plays Sam, who's this girl next door who's being abused by her father. And it's about this kid who strikes up a friendship with her and sort of this neighborhood family. And the kid's a robotic genius, and he has an 80s robot. Because, of course, every movie made in the mid-80s had an 80s robot in it. I mean, everything from Rocky IV to Space Camp and of Revenge of the Nerds. And I guess I've never read the original book, but the original book, she ends up dying. And the kid loves her so much as a friend that he puts this robotic chip in her brain from his 80s robot. And she kind of goes insane and starts killing people. They beefed up the gore in this movie. She's this insane creature going around just murdering people with everything from basketballs to shovels. And this is a completely bonkers movie because it almost works in so many ways, but other ways it doesn't. And when you pitch it to somebody and you watch the trailer, there's no hint of an 80s robot in it at all. But the 80s robot is very important to the story. But the fact that I don't think it tested well, so everybody hid the 80s robot stuff in them. I never saw it in the 80s. I ended up seeing it on VHS later, maybe early 90s. I didn't like it then. It kind of looped back around. And I appreciate it for just the good old college try by Wes Craven to do something different. And it's interesting and it's different, but it's this kind of epic failure that's really, really fun to watch. And it reeks of the 80s. And it's one of those that maybe if I saw it when I was 15 or 14 in 1985 when it came out, I would have really connected with it. But I mean, it kind of flopped, but it's this bizarre little piece of 80s pop culture that I think a lot of people forget even existed. And it's this weird little hiccup in Wes Craven's career, you know, between Nightmare on Elm Street and Shocker. And I've always loved Wes Craven's stuff, even his garbage. So I kind of have a lot of fun with this movie, but you have to appreciate 80s movies and it helps to have lived through it. So I wouldn't say you can take this terribly seriously, but it's a fun little movie. The new Blu-ray, it comes with a new interview with Christy Swanson, a new interview with Bruce Joel Rubin. And it gives an interview with the effects makeup artist, and it talks to the composer in the film. There's also the theatrical trailer and the TV spots, which are really interesting to watch for the epically terrible synopsis of the story compared to the movie you just watched. So I gotta say, this one's fun, so I'm gonna say it kind of rocks, even though it's this insane train wreck of a dumpster fire that is fascinating to behold.
It kind of rocks.
Other discs available this week, we have Old and Snake Eyes and The Protégé, all those from earlier this summer. And then from vintage releases, we've got Scream in 4K, Carlito's Way in 4K, Maniac Cop 2 and 3 in 4K, The Silence of the Lambs in 4K, and then The Incredible Shrinking Man gets a Criterion release. And then on TV, you've got Superman and Lois Season 1. And that's it. I need to go. Next week, I'm going to be talking about Last Night in Soho, Antlers, and The French Dispatch. Until then, have a fat time at the movies or at home.